Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
From the home of time.
It is now quite a day for local sport from your local team.
Woo! This is Charlton Live.
When the red, red Robin comes bob, bob, bobbing along, along, there'll be no more sobbing when he starts robbing his own sweet song. Wake up, wake up, you sleepyhead, get up. Get up, get out of bed, cheer up, cheer up, the sun is red. Live, love, love and be happy. What if I be blue? Now I'm walking through fields of flowers. Rain may glisten, but still I listen for hours and hours. I'm just a kid again, doing what I did again, singing a song. When the red, red Robin comes bob, bob, bobbing along.
Come on, Josh Morris, you've got to play nice. You can't be doing that twice in 3 minutes. That is not cricket. Good evening to you and welcome to Charlton Live here on Maritime Radio. My name is Louis Mendes. As on tonight's show, we're going to look back at yesterday's defeat at Scunthorpe United. And joining me in the studio to do just that is Mr. Lewis Cat. How are you doing, Lewis?
Yes, good, mate. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad. You didn't go yesterday, but you...
I didn't go yesterday.
You followed and disappointed.
Followed from afar and gutted.
Gutted. Another man who also didn't go yesterday, but is kind enough to join me in the studio this evening, is Nathan Muller. How are you doing, Nath?
Living the dream, mate. I was in the pub.
You're in the pub, yeah?
Yep, as per usual.
As per usual, you are a drunk man more often than not. Also on tonight's show, we will look back at yesterday's defeat at Scunthorpe. We're going to hear the highlights of that. We're also going to hear Carl Robinson interviewing me, and then I'll try to interview him back after the game. We've got some great stuff lined up for the second half of the show as well. We're going to hear from Simon Webster, the captain of the club at the time that we returned to the Valley in 1992. He was here at the Valley earlier today, taking some photos for the anniversary kit launch, which is coming at some point later on during the week. Now, I wasn't here, but one of the club guys managed to grab an interview for us. So we're going to hear from Simon Webster. We're also going to hear from Paul Breen, who's an author of the Charlton Men and the Bones of a Season, two Charlton-related books. He came in to the studio about an hour ago to chat to me about his two books and other books as well, Charlton-related books he thought that fans might like the idea of as a Christmas present. And finally, of course, you can't forget, yesterday was the 250th Charlton appearance of an absolute legend, our fullback, our captain at the moment, Chris Solly. So here's our player in focus this week. You would have seen we tweeted out about an hour ago a tweet with his picture on. If you want to reply to that, let us know your favourite memories of Chris Solly in his 250 appearances for the club thus far. But now, just very quickly, before we hear the highlights, Lewis, a defeat on the road. So you weren't there, but you listened and you read what happened, and so you know roughly what happened. I mean, considering I felt we played pretty well, what can you take from this game?
Well, to me, it sounds like we put in a pretty spirited display away from home against a very strong Scunthorpe side. And just undone by two moments of individual quality from Josh Morris. So, of course, it's hard to take the defeat. But I don't think you could complain about how Charlton played. I think Carl Robinson probably puts it across in his interview that he couldn't have asked his players to do any more apart from maybe stick the ball in the back of the net. So we had our own chances. I suppose it's just being clinical, but yeah, it was just two moments of absolute quality, wasn't it, from Josh Morris?
We know we're not going to win every game this season, Nathan. And so it's our first defeat in 10 league games. We're not counting the Checker trade. The wheels haven't just suddenly come off, have they? Especially if you consider that performance we put in, particularly in the first half, where you know we were solid and we were creating chances.
Yeah, that's like Lou said. You know, they're a good side. We had plenty of chances in the game. And let's not forget we were missing a fair few players. So to put in a performance that we did yesterday, I think it bodes well, especially, you know, no Reevesy, no Clarkey. Obviously, Marshy's still not 100%. But, you know, I think it bodes well. But like you say, I think maybe it will just bring us down to earth a little bit. We don't get too carried away with it. So.
Right, well, let's have a listen to the highlights of yesterday's game from Valley Pass up at Glanford Park. It was Terry Smith and it was club journalist George Jones.
Reverse flick, but it was read by Ojo, who's in the centre circle and will go right. But that'll be picked off by De Silva. De Silva on a run now on this left-hand side. Lovely cut back inside to Ricky Holmes. Holmes has got Marshall to his right-hand side, but he steps on it, goes back the other way to De Silva. De Silva, chip ball into the box, looking for McGuinness. Oh, it's just over his head. Marshall with the attempted shot from the right-hand side of the six-yard box, but it goes wide. On the Charlton left-hand side, swung across. It's headed away by McGuinness, but only goes to Clark. Clark inside. That's a lovely...
great tackle.
Grabbed by Ricky Holmes, and he's gone past Clark as well. He tried to bring him down, but Clark... Holmes is still on it. Lovely ball into Marshall. He's into the penalty box. Marshall takes the shot. Saved by the keeper. It goes just wide right of the post. And Charlton will have a corner.
Konza inside and back to Amos. We'll use the keeper, Amos, to find Bauer. Bauer further left to Nabisar. He's got space to run into Nabisar. Instead goes for the early switch looking for Marshall, but it's read by Burgess. But the loose ball's picked up by Forster Caskey. He finds Ricky Holmes, edge of the penalty area. Chip ball looking for McGuinness. The header! And tipped onto the post by the keeper.
What a save.
What a great save that was by Gilkes to stop Charlton taking the lead. And now Scunthorpe try to play it out of defence.
Unbelievable save there.
Now back to McArdle.
Brilliant save by Matt Gilkes. Great cross from Ricky Holmes towards the far post. And Josh did everything right, headed it the way it came, and going the wrong way, he managed to get his fingertips to it and knock it onto the post. But here we come again.
And Charlton won it back in centre midfield. Ricky Holmes with the shot. Oh, and it's turned left of the post by Gilkes again. Two good saves in a matter of seconds. And Charlton on the ascendancy.
So that's not going to reach him, I don't think. Bishop will head it forward for Scunthorpe. Finds Madden on the near touch on this touchline on the Charlton left. Swings it into the box, and it's a dangerous one. It's a header. Oh, what a save from Ben Amos.
Cons are beaten to it. I'm trying to see who that was. Is that Hopper?
It's Hopper, I think.
Got his head to it. Looked like it was going into the top corner. And Ben Amos snaked the right hand out to tip it over the bar.
De Silva does well to ride the challenge. And that's the last action of this first half.
So Morris, they didn't announce that at all, did they? Josh Morris has come on for Scunthorpe. And a long ragged ball for picks out. Holmes in the penalty box. He brings it down and slams it against Amos. I thought he might have handballed that in the control of that, but he got away with it. And then the shot was blocked away by Amos. Crossfield ball to pick out De Silva on the left hand side. De Silva forward up to McGuinness, edge of the penalty area, looking to turn his man. Does so, takes a shot. Oh, just over the bar. The first shot in anger in the second half is the Addicts.
McGuinness and now coming back. That means everybody in a white shirt is behind the ball and on the edge of the Charlton penalty area. Referee marks the position of the wall. McGuinness is in it, as is Cashy. Popper also standing in the wall now as Adelaikon and Morris over this. It's Morris with a left foot effort and it's into the right hand corner.
And on 15 minutes, Scunthorpe have the lead.
Really good free kick there from Morris. I don't think Amos could have done anything about that. Put it over the wall with his left foot and right into the top corner. Got it all to do now to get back into the game.
Turns. Morris, rather, turns Cashin and takes the shot. Oh, it's a good shot as well.
Right in the top left-hand corner on this occasion. And Scunthorpe are 2-0 up.
It's two absolute wonder goals there for Morris. One with his left foot, one with his right foot. That one there came in from the left and he whipped it into the top corner. Again, no chance for Ben Amos. And Charlton, from being the better side for the opening hour, are now 2-0 down in a matter of minutes.
Two worldies from Morris. I suppose if you're going to be ultra critical, I'm going to say that he turned both Holmes and Cashier a little too easy for Charlton's liking. But once he got into that position, unleashed a right foot shot, which again Amos trying to get across to it with his left hand, couldn't get anywhere near it, and it nestled into the top left hand corner, cleared away by Crofts. And that is the final whistle, and it's finished here at Glanford Park, 2-0 to the hosts.
So there we go, the highlights of yesterday's defeat in the end at Scunthorpe United. And sometimes you just have to put your hands up and say, and Josh Morris has pulled two absolute worldies out of the bag there. And I mean, in what was a tight game where we were creating the better chances and Scunthorpe weren't really having chances, it was going to take something special like that to open us up. And he did it twice in a minute, having just come off the bench because he'd been injured recently. That's not fair, is it?
Well, no, I mean...
that's cheating.
But saying that, well, I mean, with the amount of times that Ricky's done it, maybe...
that's exactly what I'm saying, isn't it? Yeah, Ricky's done it plenty of times.
I mean, you've just got to hold your hands up and say just they were... I mean, that second one was just unbelievable. And like Robbo said, it was on his right foot. I never knew he had a right foot either, but I was a blooming sculpture. But, yeah. Like I said earlier, it's... Even though we lost the game, we still, like you said, we created loads of chances and stuff. So I'm not that sort of downbeat about it. I mean, if that was against Plymouth, then obviously it's a bit different. But they're a good side and they're unbeaten in seven, obviously now. But disappointing. But yeah, two absolute worldies. But couldn't really do much about them, can you? Really?
No, it's funny actually, because when Carl Robertson was coming out to do the interviews at Pitchside, was exactly the same time that Morris was coming out. He was going to go up to the radio bit to speak to the local BBC radio. And Robinson knew Morris from when he was a coach at Blackburn. He was on the books at Blackburn when he was younger. And cleaning up the language slightly, Robinson said, "I never know you could do that on your right foot," and stuff like that. It was quite funny. And obviously the big news at the start of the game was that it was as expected, Reeves wasn't there. Now, some people were implying, they're thinking that Carl and Ahern Grant will come into the middle. Now, instead, Carl decided to bring Patrick Bauer back in, push Naby Sarr out to left back, and push Dade Silva up to the sort of left attacking midfield. Now, that's not something I can't remember seeing Jay playing in that position for us before. But, you know, if you think of the sort of player he is nippy, he can run with the ball, you'd expect him to, he would be all right there. And he did do quite well there.
Yeah, I mean, he's always been good going forwards. He has quite a good partnership with Ricky Holmes on that side, on the overlap. And he can deliver a good ball in. So it does make sense if we're lacking the bodies there and we can use him. And Naby seems to be able to slot in anywhere across the back four. So it was quite a good change because I'm not sure with Carl. I don't know if he'd be ready for the start. I think he looked quite good when he came on Tuesday. But I'm not sure if a game like that from the start is maybe a bit too much for him, if he's just that sort of off the bench impact player. But I'm not sure. I'm not too sold on Carlin anyway. So I was quite happy to see Jada Silva push forward.
And it's frustrating though, of course, with Ben Reeves now. He seems to be a player who has certainly been struggling to reach full fitness since he's come here. Didn't have his pre-season, but I think it's happened at clubs before where perhaps doesn't quite get the run of games that he needs, and every now and then he picks up a little something, and that seems to be the case so far.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, even the short stint he's had on the side with us so far, he's managed to bag a decent amount of goals. So you can only hope and see what he'd be like when he's got a full season under him, or if he can get a good run of games. But he didn't have a pre-season, so he's going to be behind the others fitness wise and like Carl said, he probably shouldn't have played him Tuesday, but he's that kind of player who's determined and wants to get in the side. But hopefully he's not out for too long. We can get him back in the side soon, along with Billy Clark. We missed Billy Clark, actually. I do like Billy Clark.
Yeah, so just a couple of injuries we've got to cope with as well. Don't forget, by the way, if you want to have your sound on yesterday's game, you can email us, studio@charltonlive.co.uk, or you can tweet us at Charlton Live, or you can head over to the Charlton Live forum. There's a thread on there for tonight's show. We started off, if you look at our results so far away from home this season, I worked it out for top half, and then I looked down the table and actually worked out it works for the top 19, because the only two we'd lost before that yesterday was Gillingham and Plymouth away from home. So our record, but if you look at the teams we played in the top half away from home. We played 4, won 3, lost and drawn 1 even. So, you know, we're not afraid to go to teams and become difficult to beat and look very good on the counter-attack. And that was certainly how we started up yesterday. I mean, we did have the first chance where De Silva had broken down the left and put a cross over to the far post where Marshall had bombed forward but didn't really have time to sort of adjust himself for his... For a volley. But then we had a huge chance in 14 minutes, a superb break, we heard it there in the highlights from Ricky Holmes, and slipped it through to Mark Marshall, who's gone through 1-on-1. Now, I don't know if you saw it on the highlights, Nathan, but in my opinion, maybe just took ever so slightly too long to make his decision as to which way he was going, and by the time he finally took his shot, Gilkes, the goalkeeper, was right on top of him. But that's a couple of 1-on-1s now we've seen Marshall miss in the last few weeks, and just that sort of thing that perhaps if he was slightly further ahead into his season or had that pre-season behind him, we'd expect him to be putting those in the back of the net.
Yeah, no, that's what I was just about to mention, the one on Tuesday against Rochdale, he had something similar and he was on his weaker side. But yeah, I think give it another 5-6 games, he'd probably put it away. But yeah, he's sort of let him go away with him, and obviously the keeper's come out. But you notice as soon as he went down as well, I think it was Caskey that came over and sort of picked him up to make sure his head didn't go down, because it's easy for him to start dwelling on it. But he's getting himself in the position, so that's the main thing. We're still getting in those positions. Like, we've just got to be a bit more ruthless, which I know is one of Robbo's buzzwords. But yeah, it was disappointing. But like I said, we're still generating chances. If we're going away from home and not creating anything, I'd be slightly more worried. But I think playing away from home suits us better, because teams aren't going to just sit back on their own box at home and try and let us break them down. So, and obviously that proves well for our sort of counter-attacking. But it wasn't to be yesterday, but unfortunately. Mm. But they're a good side, so.
Yeah, now we saw an unbelievable save from Matt Gilkes when the cross came over to the near side and McGuinness was there. Now, McGuinness sort of met the header. He did everything right, headed it down into the ground. It seemed to go through the goalkeeper. Like, I thought it'd gone under his arm, but he just got fingertips onto it and pushed it onto the post. And even seconds later after that, I think we saw Ricky Holmes with a drive, which he tipped to turn around the post. So, we are going to be ultra critical after a game where we've lost, even though we did play well. Is you're going to say, you know, these chances. We've said it so many times over this season. There's been a couple of games where if we stick that chance away that we miss, and we've seen it so many times this season. Am I being too harsh there? Is it unlucky if you come up against a keeper that's in inspired form?
I don't know. I mean, we had the same on Tuesday. You know, that wasn't really against a keeper that's in sensational form. He let one go through him, didn't he? Drop the ball, and that's how we scored. And yeah, Carlin had the ball straight at him. So I don't think it's too harsh. I think we do, like Nathan says, we do need to be more ruthless in front of goal, and we do need to take our chances better. But I'm not too downbeat about the defeat yesterday, although it's not great in terms of the table. We have still got the 2 games in hand over Scunthorpe. So as long as we make the most of that, hopefully it'll push us back up there.
So we got to half time with the score at 0-0 at the start of the second half. I mean, that's when they bought Morris on. So that's when you're starting to worry. Because, I mean, he was the danger. We were talking about him in the car on the way up. So, oh, apparently he's not playing. We know he's a danger man. He's got a hatful of goals from midfield last season as well. But he came on at half time. They didn't even do an announcement on the side of the pitch. So I didn't even notice till a couple of minutes in. I thought they're being sneaky here. They're trying to get away with one.
Secret.
But he came on. And we even had a couple of sort of a half chance there. McGuinness again, a really nice turn. There was a couple of times yesterday we had nice turns on the box and ended up firing off just off target. But then, so they have this free kick just beyond the hour mark now. And we've all seen it. I mean, I haven't seen many League One players who can curl the ball that well on their good foot, which was the left foot for the first goal. I tweeted out there's not much more. I mean, a couple of people said there was only a couple of people in the wall. I mean, do you think that has a major effect on it?
I don't. I mean, if you see where the position of the ball is, so if you're aimless, you'll know he's a left footer. So it's very unlikely he's going to curl it where he was going to, which he obviously did, or to curl it the other way. Because if it was a right foot, he probably would have had a couple more people in the wall, I think. But I wouldn't have blamed it on the wall. I just think you've just got to say it was a
great strike.
I mean, both of the strikes, yeah, looked like they were going to hit the corner flag before they curled back in. I mean, it's incredible.
Is it windy up there? Is that what it was?
It's incredible.
Call the game off.
It was incredible technique to get the ball to bend around the keeper there, and then the second one only came 2 minutes later, and then absolutely shell shocked. But again, it's a great goal. I mean, Again, if you're being ultra critical, some people say, well, you sort of let him turn outside the area. But generally, I think as long as you're not letting people into the area, you're sort of quite happy to let him run about outside and just try and keep reasonably tight. But
yeah, I don't think anyone could have seen that flying top corner.
Yeah, he only needed half a yard. And like you say, Lewis, I mean, he curled it right footed again in off the post. And again, Amos had absolutely no chance.
No chance at all. You just got to applaud it, haven't you? It's annoying. But it's not like we've gone up there and we've played badly or we've not put in a performance. We've gone up there and given it a go against one of the strongest sides in the league, and unfortunately the only thing we've been undone by is two moments of magic.
And I mean, how many times have teams come away from the Valley this season or playing us at their own grounds and gone, you know what, that would have been a tight game if it wasn't for Ricky Holmes just knocking one in from 35 yards. Think about the Wimbledon game here a couple of weeks ago. It was a 0-0 game until Ricky Holmes curled that free kick in. It's, you know, we've dished out that medicine enough times. Sometimes you've got to take a taste of your own.
Yeah, exactly. And sometimes, you know, it, like I said earlier, maybe it'll just keep us sort of level-headed, and that we obviously strive to win Tuesday even more now, because we know sometimes you won't get the points that you feel that you've deserved. But yeah, it's not the end of the world. I think if we win on Tuesday, you know, I think it'll obviously soon be forgotten. But you know, we didn't go up there and get battered 5-0 or anything, so I don't think a lot of people would grumble at it. Yeah, it's annoying, but like we've said all throughout the show so far, they're just, you can't do much about it, really. He's got two goals for goal of the month, so he's going to win it, surely.
It's not like we're coming away from... If we're coming away from a performance and we haven't made those chances in the first half and we hadn't done anything other than just conceded two, then we'll probably come on here and grumble a bit more. But, you know, you can sometimes separate the result from the performance and take that result in context of the run we're on and the run we've been on recently. And you think, right, you know, let's not panic. We've lost a couple of games before this season. The right way to react to that is what we need to do now. If you think about the reaction to the defeat of Plymouth, I think we went and won like the next five. And if we can start putting another run together like we've had, you know, if we can now go another 5-6 games unbeaten, get that run going again, then we'll still be in a very healthy position. We're 6 points off the top two with a game in hand.
Exactly. And I think that's the thing, is that we've played so well this season and the feel around the place is different. So if we'd have come out of the result, you know, from yesterday last year, we'd probably be sat here moaning about it. But the way we actually have played this season and the togetherness in the squad and everything, it's just we're in a good position. So I wouldn't get too down about yesterday. I think go into Tuesday and then we've got a bit of a break from the league, so maybe it gives us a chance to get some players back fit and then hit the Christmas fixture list and see how we go.
Yeah, I mean, after the second goal, I do think we were quite on top again. I mean, Scunthorpe were very happy just to stick men behind the ball. They even bought an Andrew Cross to see the game out, which is the ultimate insult. But
Big Nose was injured, wasn't he?
Yeah, Big Nose. Apparently, he was spotted in a moon boot as well. Like, whatever he's done is quite nasty. And Simon Church was there as well, but I didn't get to see him and touch him, sadly. we did force a few corners after that, but like I say, nothing really happened. The game did peter out in the end. I mean, that's when you do look to the bench, like who are we bringing off the bench to try and change things. It was Carlin who came on, and then even later on it was Rico Hackett-Fairchild. I mean, you know, Rico, we haven't seen much of, you know, enough of to have a real opinion on just yet. I mean, Carlin, like you say, did quite well when he came on Tuesday, and he didn't do badly, I say, but he's not the sort of player. Like, I mean, they were lucky that they had Morris to bring off the bench, who's obviously would have started if he was fully fit. But you know, we didn't really have those options on the bench to change the game, because we were in a slight injury crisis now. I mean, if you think about that, if there was one position where we at the start of the season we said, oh, we could probably cope with injuries there, that is that free behind the striker. So we have lost Reeves and we have lost Clark recently. It's, you know, the two positions where we've decided we definitely can't lose anyone to injury now. If you look at defensive midfield, so Cashier and Forsikaski, they've survived so far. Yeah. And McGuinness up top, they've survived so far. So been reasonably lucky with our injuries, but it has just maybe caught up with us slightly in terms of the bench, I guess, at the moment.
Yeah. I mean, you look at it as well, we do rely on that three a lot. You know, Ricky Holmes, we rely on him to put in 90 minutes every week, and that fatigue of playing Saturday, Tuesday, we've been lucky with him so far. Losing Fosu when he's been on fire, again, that's been difficult. Clark, I think we really miss Clark, because he's that sort of aggressive box-to-box guy, isn't he? He's everywhere, Clark, and we really do miss him as well. And like you said, Reeves, he's come in, he's been scoring goals, and we know he's proven at this level, so he's not hit full speed yet either, and now Marshall's coming back in. that's such a strong set of players. So to be sort of three down is annoying. But once we get them all back fit, it will be good. So hopefully that won't be too much longer.
And the perfect chance as well. I mean, is it after a defeat, you're thinking, you're really hoping that there's something to come along and try and put it right as soon as possible so it helps? So we're now at home on Tuesday against a decent side in Peterborough, but it's going to be a real test. But if we can come through that with, you know, 3 points, then that'll be a real boost, and Saturday will be forgotten.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think we do definitely need to win on Tuesday, because I was just looking at the fixtures and we've got Wigan and Blackburn coming up away from home in December.
Bring them on.
So it's going to be a tricky December, so we need to make sure our home form remains strong. But yeah, they seem to always get a... I don't know when the last time we beat them or whatever, but they always seem to be like a bogey side, or I could be getting it completely wrong, Peter. But last time I remember watching... was when we beat him 5-1 when Lee Martin scored.
Yeah, we had a good win cracking. Under Powell, I think, a 3-2 win, off the top of my head. And we had the 4-1 cup win a couple of years ago as well. So, but yeah, we did lose twice last season. So
yeah.
Carl Robinson certainly got a bone to pick with him. Of course, I think they were his first league defeat off the top of my head, possibly for Carl. But we'll let him worry about that in a minute. First of all, he was worried about yesterday's game when I got to speak to him after the defeat up at Glanford Park. Now, I was really interested to find out what he made of the game, but he was more interested in finding out what I had to make of the game. Carl, a defeat in the end here at Scunthorpe. Yourself were outdone by two moments of real quality.
Well, how do you think we performed today over 90 minutes? What do you think?
I thought it was quite an even game. Charlton had some good chances in the first half.
Yeah, we by far edged the chances. So remember, it's all about your chances that you create. And our setup was perfect. They didn't have a chance. I don't recall that a chance. It's as strong as away performance as a unit as we probably put in all season. Even second half, I think it's a team that's dominant here, that's stayed in the league. We've nullified it, and the first goal is an unbelievable. When you see it back, you will not believe how much that ball's moved. And then when you see this, then you think, oh my god, that's from strike. And then you see the next one, which is 10 times better. You think, what more? My players have done nothing wrong here today. My players have done nothing wrong. And from my perspective, that's all I can ask for.
And Gilkes in inspired form in that first half, denying McGuinness and Holmes.
What a save. And even the one who comes back off the post, Jake just stood there and it goes through what? It actually got the lad who slid in, it went through his legs. So he could have gone anyway. But listen, you've got to just look at today and go, hang on, we play well here. And I don't think many teams have come here and done this. Well, I know that because I've seen the games.
You think about a result like this and you say you'll take pride from the performance and not worry too much about the fact you've lost tonight?
No, you can't. How can you judge players when we've without some of our offensive players, as you well know, we've created two or three guilt-edged chances and they've scored between the best goals you're going to see all season against Charlton Athletic? That's as simple as a conclusion as you're going to get.
And not the result you're hoping for in your 400th managerial
not about
game.
Me, it's not about me. It's not... to get that many, I felt like that's probably the best goal I've seen in the 400. So in all the 400, in the 400, 399 games before that, I've never seen. Do you know what? I've been very lucky over that period of time. My family have had some difficult times and some moments where you think, what am I doing this job for? But overall, I'm so very fortunate to do it. But today, like I say, I won't see two better goals in one game against my team than what I've seen today. If the next 400 either, I don't think.
it's a first league defeat in 10, but you've got a chance in short time to try and put it right against Peterborough on Tuesday.
Yeah, it's massive that we perform. I know they've lost today as well. But you go and beat Peterborough on Tuesday and you go 1 point behind Scunny with another game in hand, which is Shrewsbury, which you win that year, you're second on points. So it shows you how tight this top six is, very, very tight. If everyone in the series was looking at the way the table is sort of shaping up in how it should be in some ways, Blackburn obviously have got a very, very good side as well, so they're in the mix. And we always knew, listen, the size of the squad that they've got a bigger squad than us, and we knew they were always going to come good. But we've got players that are out that are going to get back to full fitness very shortly, and when they come back, we're going to be fresher and better than before.
Finally, it was Chris Solly's 250th appearance. You don't see that too often from an academy player these days at a single club.
No, and I know he could have gone once or twice. Just shows his dedication that he believes in playing for this football club, and I can't ask any more from him. He's a great captain, he's a great person, and I want to congratulate him on it. But I'm sure if you spoke to me in Souls, I think you'd get the same reaction from Souls. Not about him, it's about Charlton Athletic.
Carl, Jada Silva played further forward to Labia left back. What was the thinking behind that?
Well, they're right back, the most offensive right back in the league. We knew from watching their games, a lot of their goals have been through set pieces. we needed to get a bit more height on it. And from an offensive perspective, not having the three players that you know of in Reezy, Clarkey and Tariq, we knew we were sort of scraping the battle a little bit. But it worked. It was tactically today, the players took on board everything we've asked. I just said to Mineni and Ricky Holmes, said we probably won't play, we'll play a lot worse than that and win. And that's the sign of a good team, that we've come to a top team and really performed to a high level.
Yeah, has Joe played there before on the left?
Yeah, I seen him before we signed him last season. I went to watch him play for Chelsea and he was playing as a left winger. Okay. I know we can play as a 10 and behind the striker. And Naby Sarr is top drawing the ball, as you all know. So it doesn't really, it gives us an extra height in the team. It gives us a little bit more security away from home. It worked, like I say. I don't think I can ask any more. I just felt with Carlo, one of the young players playing today in that wide left area, I felt it would have been a chore for them doing the defensive duties. And we almost negated. We didn't mind about our left winger not getting involved. We felt our 10 would be the dominant player in the team. And Ricky Holmes was outstanding that first 60 minutes. Obviously, once they got the two, there was no space for us to play in behind the lines, and then we had to go with two strikers up front. But then once you start banging things forward, it becomes a lottery of whether it drops or doesn't drop for you. But listen, we go back, we're very positive with our performance, and we get ourselves ready for Tuesday evening.
And Mike Marshall, third league start in 7 days. How's he feeling in terms of his
fitness? Yeah, he's a little bit fatigued, obviously, but it is what it is, unfortunately. We are where we are at this moment in time. But then, on top of that, he should have scored the other day, he should have scored again today. We need to take them chances, and he's frustrated with himself for not doing so.
Yeah, Ben Reeves, is he any update on him on Tuesday?
No, I changed, he stretched for the ball, and as he stretched for the ball, someone just sort of pushed him, which extended his hamstring. So we're saying, no, he won't be fit for Tuesday, but it's not a serious one. Listen, could have rushed him out and get him out there, possibly. But we need to, I'd rather lose them for one or two games rather than lose for 6, 7, 8 games. Yeah. I think that's the key message, that we've got one league game now, and then the next is obviously the FA Cup, and then we go away in the Chequered Trade Trophy. So in some ways, the next game after Tuesday that we'll really get our eye on is Portsmouth, obviously, in that anniversary game at the Valley. So it's we'll hopefully have them all back for that.
And just finally for me, Esri Konsa at the end was kind of involved in a few pushing and shoving with their striker. Do you know that as well?
No, good. He's turned into a man. I put my heart on the line for you, put my
heart on the line for you. Further out to Fossil on his left. De Silva's on the overlap. De Silva, ball into the box. Looking for McGuinness. Gets his head there, but just skips off his head, in fact. And Solly will pick it up on the far side. Chip ball banging in the box. Headed clear. Drops to Ricky Holmes with a chance. Oh, what a cracker. Oh, Ricky Holmes, what a belter that is. Absolute stalker of a shot. Put my heart on the line for you.
I'm not got a cat, but if I had a cat, I'd be kicking it all over my house tonight.
No, that's not Glove Pup's Midlife Crisis, that song, Nathan. But since I'm just like, yeah, it might be.
Grass. Snitch.
Carl Robertson there interviewing Luis Mendes after yesterday's 2-0 defeat at Scunthorpe United. I wasn't expecting that at all. I didn't know what to say. I think Carl. Talking sense there, really. You can feel frustrated after a game like that where you haven't perhaps taken your chances, but then you've been. I mean, he said we were sort of soaking it up. He said, or something along those lines. We were they weren't creating chances, and so for it was going to have to come from. I mean, we've seen other away games like Bradford and stuff like that where we, you know, Rotherham, where we've not let other teams have many chances, big teams away from home, and that was a very similar. But because we're playing a good team, they've got a player who can just pull that out of the bag. Now, obviously, it was I did ask Carl about it there, but he barely wanted to talk about it on Thursday before the game. He really wasn't that interested after the game. When it is his 400th game as a manager of MK and with us, his 1-year anniversary for a 37-year-old. I mean, he can be very proud, I guess, of what he's achieved so far. But, you know, 400 games at his age is no mean feat.
Yeah, definitely. I think really, you look at it, he's done a job wherever he's been, really, and here especially, he seems to have brought like a real good sort of togetherness and feel good factor around the place. I mean, I come to a game now and I feel excited to be here. Well, you know, over the last few seasons, you can become quite sort of disengaged, can't you, with the club and not really, you know, you'd lose a game, you'd be like, oh, expected that. But at the moment, it really cares. And even if we go a goal down, like Tuesday night, people get back behind the scene. There's no sort of, oh, booing and stuff like that. It's like, come on. And he's brought that back. And you see the togetherness of the players on the pitch at the end of the game and the huddles and stuff like that, regardless whether we win, lose or draw. And I think he's been a real positive real positive person to have around the club, and it's good for him. It's a big milestone at 37. So he didn't have much of a playing career, did he? Really?
No, so it's non-league. Suppose, well, yeah.
Yeah, if he's sort of focused on managing his age, that's fair play to him.
Yeah. Nathan, if you think Carl, for whatever reason, ever has to give up his managerial job, do you think he'd be a good sports journalist?
No.
No, you didn't like his you didn't like his style of questioning.
I felt sorry for him a little bit because was you a bit stumped, I suppose?
Yeah, I didn't know what to say.
Like, hang on, I'm supposed to be doing the questions, am I?
Yeah, I'm glad Carol never asked me anything like that. right, let's get on to the correspondence. I asked you guys what you made of yesterday's defeat up at Glanford Park against Scunthorpe United. If you want to have your say, don't forget you can email us studio at cheltonlive.co.uk or you can tweet us at cheltonlive. Gamby says, I was at the game and I felt we didn't play badly. We were just beat by two worldies. My only complaint is that Roland's small squad theory cost us today. With the injuries we have, our bench looked very weak. We need an extra striker who can play on the shoulder and get in behind. Now, obviously, we know there's an extra striker who's been around the building for way over a month now in the form of Leon Bess. I mean, do you think it's important that we find a way to get that deal done sooner rather than later, Lewis?
Yeah, I'd like to think we could get that deal over the line because he's sort of a proven goal scorer at this level. And like you say, we've touched wood, Josh has been okay so far, but it only takes that one niggle to put him out for a little while. I mean, we had the game where we had to rest him for international duty, so... Yeah, I think it's important. Would I like us to spend some money in January and bring somebody? Yes, but I also think Leon Bess isn't a bad alternative. I think he'd do a job, maybe at least at the end of the season. Mm. I don't think we've got anything to lose by giving him a shot, and he scored in the friendly, so why not?
Yeah. Tweeting from Reese, who says another game where we've needed an impact sub. So we sub on Cag and Rico Hackett Fairchild, who are nowhere near good enough to play in promotion chasing side. And yet another game where McGuinness hasn't scored. That's 1 in 9 now, which is simply dreadful. I mean, let's pick up that point first. I mean, McGuinness did come very close. He scored the other day, didn't he, from the corner against Milton Keynes. I mean, his goal scoring record at the start of this season was pretty good, and generally over the course of last season, he had injury problems as well, but he'd go on a little run, then have a few games off, and go on a little run again. I mean, Lewis, your thoughts on Josh McGuinness?
He's never going to be that sort of 20, 30 goal striker a season, is he really? He's not going to score 30 goals.
Unless you're going to buy him for
millions of pounds. You're going to spend millions and millions of pounds. I think that because he's a striker, he's maybe not given enough credit for the amount he brings to a side in terms of assists and starting play and holding up the ball. He is just that big lump, and we do get a lot of goals from midfield. You know, you look at Ricky and Tariq; they've both got a fair amount of goals this year, and. I don't know. I mean, I'd like him to score more, and maybe we do need that prolific striker, but like you say, I think it's rare to find that in this division unless you do spend the money and you go out there and buy, you know, who could you even get in now? Who was going to come down a division? Well, you have to get someone from the Championship.
Yeah, it's always very interesting in January in particular. I mean, in the form of Leon Bess, I mean, he's a free agent. I mean, some people say, well, there must be a reason why he's been a free agent this whole time as well, but you very rarely find strikers just waiting around. You know,
yeah.
Someone signed me. I'm really good.
Yeah,
I mean, I've been saying that for years, but I'm a liar. So it isn't the easiest position to find. I mean, I know he's only scored 1 in 9. For me, McGuinness, I mean, I thought he played really well on Tuesday. Brought other people into the game. Yeah, works well with his back to goal. I mean, he's put through so much work on his own up top. For a club and country, I mean, I know he doesn't play on his own for the country, but he doesn't get rest. It's so relentless for him. He's gonna have quiet spells. But you know, for me, if you look, you know, headed chances, you expect him to score. I mean, it would have been a goal yesterday if it wasn't for an unbelievable save from Gilkes, and then he had a couple of shots on the turn, which you know, on another day may have gone in. It's not his forte shooting from outside the box, but he did have a couple of efforts turned well for it. So you know, I haven't lost faith in Josh yet, Reese, but I know you're. You did say it's 1 goal in 9 now. He says, the point is now, why have we not signed Bess? You must realise we're desperate and that your youth aren't good enough. And I just wonder, well, you know, there's a number of things there. Does Roland think, oh, we don't need, you know, we've already got a couple of young strikers. We've seen, we know that's sort of seemed to have been his mindset before in terms of small squad. Or is Bess going, oh, you're desperate, give me £1 million a day. You know, there must be things going on behind the scenes that we don't realise yet. And now Reese goes, Agard came on and scored twice against us. That was from MK. And he says, Morris the same yesterday, and we have no one like that. on our bench. When was the last time we bought someone on needing a goal and that player has scored? Because I really don't know. Just pay him what he wants and stop messing about with him, as it's costing us more and more points whenever we need impact from the bench. I mean, that is the say it is a money issue for, you know, whether it's Roland not wanting to spend any more money, whether it's Leon Best wanting too much money and we're not willing to pay that. I mean, how much is the price to is it too much of a price to gamble, considering, you know, promotion is at stake here?
No, I'd like to think not really. I mean, whether, I think this was mentioned Thursday, whether we've been seen as a bit of a pushover of late in terms of money and contracts and longevity of contracts and wages. And now we've sort of tightened the belt, maybe buckled down a little bit, whether they're thinking, well, hang on, this person's on this much, I'm proven at this level, why am I not on this much? But I don't know. I'd like to think it isn't that. I mean, Leon Best is surely, you know, he's been here a while. If there were other clubs sniffing around for him, surely he'd go there and you know, get a wage for playing. But I don't know. Maybe he's holding out to January. Maybe he's waiting to see what Hackett Fairchild and Carlin can do. But I agree with Reece. I think we should get the deal over the line because I think he'd bring something.
Excellent stuff. Right, message on the Charlton Life forum. There's a thread on there if you want to get involved in tonight's show as well. It says from SD Addict, from Alex. It says, I thought we defended well yesterday and didn't think we looked like conceding until their goal went in. We saw this both last Saturday and on Tuesday night. Conceding seems to rattle us, and I thought we looked a bit panicky. That said, panicky or not, I don't think there was anything that could be done about either goal. Perhaps giving away a free kick in that area was a bit sloppy, but watching it on the stream, it didn't look like there was a whole lot in it. Just Morris cleverly throwing himself into a crowd of players and winning a foul. When you see the strike for the second, it starts outside the post and almost seems to move right and then curls to the left. Now, I have to admit, I can't remember what the free kick was given for, so I can't really comment on that. But, I mean, he said a similar point to me now. We didn't look like we were going to concede until that happens. Like we were comfortable, and you know, you go away to a team that's above you and a decent team with a very good home record, have won their last five or six games. You go there and be solid, and we were.
Yeah, I think we've been. I think yeah, like was it Reece who said it?
That was Alex.
Alex. Yeah, I think in recent games apart from Rochdale first sort of half an hour or whatever it was where we weren't even in the game. I think we're a lot more solid this year, and these 1-0s that we've been having, you know, the Wimbledons and the Doncasters and the Bradfords and stuff, it's showing that we've got that little bit more resilience, whereas previous years we probably were a bit of a pushover. So yeah, I mean, defensive, and it's just a shame that obviously the only way we were going to get broken down, like we've obviously discussed, is the wonder goal. So it's disappointing, but our defending's improved so much in the last year. Massively, because every time we used to concede a corner like last year or the year before,
we conceded way over 20 corners in the season, got relegated.
That's what I mean. I used to look away because I knew what was coming.
It was awful, but now
I feel really comfortable. I'm comfortable with Amos. I prefer Amos than I did to Ruddy, or is it
to Rudd, Declan yeah. Rudd? Funny enough, someone asked me that yesterday, and I think
I prefer Amos. Well. Rudd's a good goalie, don't get me wrong, but I prefer Amos. I really do. I think he's a big old unit.
Right, Ev James tweeted us in, says, great team spirit yesterday. No one can blame us for losing two beautiful strikes. I still believe that we're on course for success this season. January is even more crucial. I would gamble on keeping everyone until May, and Tuesday is a must win. So obviously I talked about, you know, how much we're going to gamble on getting a Best or another striker in, but how much do you want to gamble on keeping the likes of Ezri Konsa? I mean, because there'll be, say it's £5 million on the table. You know, would we see that money back in the squad? I don't know. I haven't seen a great deal of that sort of stuff.
Yeah, whether we'd push for these loan backs, you know, if we could, even if we did sell him in January, if we could keep him to the end of the season. I know Carl did that previously with Dele Alli, didn't he? They sold him to Tottenham but kept him for the rest of the season. So whether we could do that, that may work. If it frees up a bit of money, then that would be good. But ideally, yeah, we would like to keep everybody together because the team's working so well and... but you know, money talks, and we haven't got a very good history of keeping hold of people, so we'll have to see what happens. But I think January is massive. I think Terry touched on it a few weeks ago as well. This probably one of the most important January windows we've had for a very long time, because it shows whether things have really changed. You know, if now that we're having the positive season, we've got the manager that we like, we've got the players that we like, we're in a position that we all think, hang on, we could do something special here. Is he gonna gamble and go for it, or is he gonna do exactly the same as he's done every other year and we get a couple of people in on loan or a couple of freebies? So we'll see. But hopefully I'm not holding my breath, but hopefully it changes.
Right, don't forget, still coming up on tonight, so we're going to hear from the club captain back in 1992 when we returned to the Valley 25 years ago. That's Simon Webster. Also going to hear from Paul Breen, a Charlton fan and author, who's going to give us some advice of books that would be good Christmas presents for Charlton fans. We've also got plenty of emails still to go through after yesterday's game. Quick break here though on Charlton Live. In fact, just before we go to that though, comment on the Charlton Live forum after I was interviewed by Carl Robinson yesterday. Red Chaser, and then I said I'm glad Carol didn't do that. Red Chaser on the forum says, "Oh come on, Louis, if Carol would try to interview you, your response would have been quite simple. Of course, we were good."
Yes,
as per Burnley away. Let's have a quick break here on Charlton Live. Back in 30 seconds.
Throw from Holmes into Solly. Solly cross ball. Foster's on the far side. Get something on it.
Yes!
Finished off by Foster Caskey. And Charlton have the lead.
Carol, a heavy defeat at Burnley today. How do you sum that one up?
We were good.
Charlton Live.
Always good to play the classics here on Charlton Live. Now, we are going to do the emails. There's still plenty of you guys who've got your thoughts on yesterday's game. But I thought I'd just break up the correspondence with a chat with a legend. Not that you two aren't legends, of course, lads, but we've got another one lined up. Now, the club we're here at the Valley today with both Simon Webster and Colin Walsh, who, of course, was the scorer of the first goal back at the Valley in 1992, because they were donning the new anniversary kit, which is going to be released. You're going to see the photos of it in the next few days. Now, I couldn't get down to the Valley today, but I asked Tom Rubichaud, the club's head of communications, to... see if he could grab a chat with one of those legends for me. So he spoke to Simon Webster, who of course was the captain at the time of the return to the Valley now. And Simon was asked on his opinion, of course, of the anniversary kit, which the club will reveal in the next few days, and also his memories of playing on that special day here at the Valley 25 years ago.
Here with Simon Webster for the kit launch for the new kit for the 25th anniversary. What do you make of the kit, Simon?
I think it's an excellent likeness. I sort of remember when we first came back here, it was quite a thin, cold kit. But we'd changed to sort of Ribeiro, and I think they've just sort of... The likeness from Hummel is excellent, yeah.
And obviously, we're standing inside the Valley at the moment. What memories do you have from that day in 1992?
I think the overriding one is just... everyone was so pleased to get back to the home of Charlton Athletic. We've been sharing the ground, number one, with... Crystal Palace and then with West Ham in the time that I'd been here, and all the talk had been about getting back to the Valley, and then to finally get back, it was just a great experience really.
And you're here today with Colin Walsh. What are your memories from that, when he scored in the seventh minute on that day?
Yeah, I mean, we started the game very well and we scored early on, and I thought it was going to go on and we were going to score two or three. But the game sort of petered out into a sort of very dogged game. I think Portsmouth was sort of going quite well at the time anyway. So in the end, it was a good win for us. And I remember that we'd not had a particularly good time at Upton Park before we came back here. And it sort of then kick-started our season again. And I think we went on a sort of a not losing streak of around sort of 10 games again. But we sort of had too many draws after the initial win back here. I think we drew about six on the spin after we came back here. Then we won a couple, and then we just, for some reason, it all went a little bit sort of sour. We started, you know, losing a few. But I think on the day, the game itself sort of went, it became less significant, the result. You know, it was just about the day and getting back here.
And speaking of that day, and you mentioned the goal, how did you feel when that goal went in from Colin?
Oh, it was a great moment. You know, from where I was, you could sort of see it building up. And when Walshy struck it, I was sort of pretty much behind the strike, and you could sort of see it going in. So I think, you know, I think the maximum crowd here was something like 8,330 something, and I think everybody was off their seats at that moment. And like I say, I thought we were going to go on and score a few more, but I mean, the main thing was that we won the game.
You'll be here for the 25th anniversary of that game on December 9th when we take on Portsmouth. How are you feeling about that game?
Yeah, I think it's going to be really exciting. I think the FA have done really well to get us a game. Well, it's been very fortunate that Portsmouth are in our league, and they've been really good at getting the game on for us on that or around that particular date. So I'm looking forward to it. And I know the whole weekend is sort of been built up for a sort of to get a few people back here who played on the day. And then I think there's a dinner then the following day. So I'll be shooting back from the ladies' game and straight to the dinner.
And 25% of the ticket revenue on that day goes to the Cheltenham Athletic Community Trust. You do a lot of work with them as well. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I think it's excellent. I mean, every year my boys and I, we do the Walk for the Upbeats, and it's a great occasion. I've known Jason since Jason Morgan since the Community Trust started. It wasn't a trust at the time, it was just a community scheme. But I think Jason started 2 weeks after I started at the football club. So I've known him, you know, through all that time. And I think they've just done such a wonderful job, you know, with all those sort of things, with the upbeats and the disability sport. So I think it's going to be great that money goes to them.
Taking his man on clock, does really well as well to do so. Now he's on to take on Buchanan, keeping the ball. Lovely ball into Konza to the touchline. Konza, reverse.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Ball back to Forster Cascade, and there's the third, and it's game over and 3 points for Cheltenham.
So there we go, that's Tom Rubishaw from the club talking to Simon Webster about the anniversary kit, and of course the 25th anniversary of the return to the Valley, which is coming up. The game against Portsmouth on the December the 9th will be designated as the anniversary game. It's 25 years since the return to the Valley, 25 years of the Cheltenham Athletic Community Trust, of course, and the club is donating 25% of home ticket revenue from the Portsmouth game, along with 25% of matchday programme sales to charity on that day, which is a nice touch. Now, obviously, I mean, we'll talk about the game coming out. The dinner's sold out now, so you can't get tickets for that. I think you can still apply to win them through the competition if you look on the club and trust websites. But the anniversary coming up, and the game itself with 25% going to charity, I think, I imagine, you know, people perhaps who haven't been coming recently, some of them will be coming back to celebrate. Will be a special day before all of our time, but you know, anyone who knows the club knows it's a special day that's coming up.
Yeah, no, it's a big day, and like Webbo said, this... it's good that obviously I assume the league has helped us out, giving us the fixture, or it's a pure coincidence. But
surely they helped us. Exactly. It must have been a request. It's not official, but it must have been, surely.
Yeah, I mean, otherwise it's just really, it's a massive coincidence. But yeah, it's going to be a big day, and obviously at the time I was only a toddler, so I wasn't, even though people think I'm older, I'm not.
Well, you're not in your mid-30s, by the way.
But no, it's going to be a good day. I'm looking forward to the dinner. Be a load of legends there. I don't know if Walshy will be there. I'm pretty sure he will be, I'd imagine. But yeah, it's going to be it'll be a good day. And if anything, 25% going into the trust, any sort of money is a massive boost for him because of the amount of stuff that they do. Obviously, we've done the Upbeats Walk last year, and it was a good day. And obviously, the more funding they get, the more projects that we can probably help them do. So, and it will keep our reputation up of being a
a fantastic community club.
It's funny, isn't it, Lewis? Really, like as I said, like we're too young to have been around when that happened. But as a Charlton fan, it's ingrained within you. You know, you've learned about that story. And you know about it, don't you?
Exactly. I mean, you only got to hear Valley Floyd Road, haven't you, to sort of learn about it and the day. And we've obviously got the banners up where I sit in the north stand with the minute, you know, that Colin Walsh scored and everything. So yeah, it's massive. I'm really looking forward to it, actually. You know, although I wasn't, you know, I'm not young enough, well, not old enough, sorry, to remember it, it obviously means a lot to a lot of people at the club. So it'll be nice, hopefully lots of people come back and celebrate the day, and then I'm sure the dinner the next day is going to be pretty special as well.
Excellent stuff. Right, let's get back on the emails after yesterday's defeat up at Scunthorpe. The first one, as per always, comes in from Chris Dabber. Thanks for your email, Chris. It says, oh well, the run has come to an end. Two weldies done for us up at Scunny. Pressure's on for Tuesday now. We can't afford to drop any points against the Posh. It's a sad state of affairs that we look at Scunthorpe as our peers. How the mighty have fallen. Mr. Robinson said there was no more that we could do. Think maybe us scoring may have been an option. We are in desperate need of a striker. What's going on with Leon Best? We either want him or we don't. Simple as that. All this stalling nonsense is completely silly. There's a reason why no one else wanted Ben Reeves. He's crocked. He can't play more than 45 minutes without breaking down. He's the David Hay of football. So a couple of points. I mean, he picks up on the Leon Best thing. We chatted about it briefly still, but I mean, I've laid forward my theories for why he may not have signed yet. I mean, do you guys, which one do you think it is? Do you think it's Roland being stingy, Leon Best wanting too much money, or something else.
I think it's terms of length of contract. I reckon that we're probably offering him till the end of the season, and I think he's probably looking for a bit more security, possibly a year, 18 months or something. And if that is the case, then I can imagine the club saying, well, no, because I don't think he's going to be on a pittance of a wage, but I don't think he'll be the highest earner. But I mean, at Leon Best's age, he's been out of football for a while. If he's only here for another 6 months, he doesn't know when he's going to be in the same situation in 6 months' time. So I think it will be more down to length of contract. But I don't think he could come in here and start demanding certain wages, to be honest. Cause come on, he's not Messi and getting 500 grand a week, is he? So, but yeah, I think it's that. But I'm not in the know. I could be wrong. But I'd imagine it'd be something like that, because it just seems like it must be something small like that, because. Mm. He's there. He's been training with us. I don't think he'll have a whole list of clubs after him.
I mean, when Carl said on Tuesday evening when I asked him about Leon Best, he said, "Oh, you know, maybe we'll look to the youth team and we'll see if there's ever stuff we can do first." I mean, do you think that's mind games with Leon Best? Has he been told that by Ronan? You can't make that signing.
Yeah, I don't know really. I mean, I'd like to think maybe it is just sort of mind games to Leon Best and.
That was my initial reaction when I heard that maybe Leon Best wanted too much money and that's what he's trying to say.
Yeah,
we have got used to almost forgotten the fact that Roland has given us this small squad and we didn't get that other striker that we wanted in the summer. So it could be that again, could it be?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I do agree with Nath. I think it is to do with contracts and everything. I imagine we don't want to commit too much to him because he has been out of football a long time and he does seem to be a little bit injury prone. So maybe we don't want to, you know, chuck a load of money at him and then. Him be injured, and then come January we can't afford to get someone in. But who knows? I'd like to think we would get the deal over the line, but you know, you don't want to pay over the odds for somebody.
Dan Farmer, evening Dan, says, hi guys, we were unlucky yesterday. Two great goals by Scunthorpe that were unstoppable, but we did have some great chances in the first half, which again, like other games, we needed to take. One defeat in 10 ain't bad, is it? So let's not all go into meltdown and move on to a tough game on Tuesday, which we need to win. Let's address the real problem, that is our shocking bench. If we lose Konza in January, then we are weaker again, and will the board buy in January? Not likely, going by other transfer windows. So if the squad is not strengthened, then my guess will be that we'll miss out on the top two and maybe even the playoffs. I hope that we are wrong. Now, I mean, if you look at other transfer windows, and I think pretty much every transfer window this season we've been left thinking, oh, we're a bit short. Not this season, sorry, over the last few years under Duchatelet, we have been left thinking we're a bit short. Now, Terry said it the other week, this will be a big one to see, you know, if they are really serious. But even in the summer, you know, Robinson made some good signings, but at the end of it we're saying we're a bit short. So, I mean, they need to prove themselves this, you know, with all the rumours of a takeover as well that may or may not be stalling, or who knows. I mean, will they be that worried about whether we need to get promoted? It would only add running costs for Roland possibly if we go up anyway, so would he care? I mean,
it's difficult because I think
I mean, if, including Leon Best, if we did get Best, I still think we need another three in January. And I don't think that's being greedy. I think that's defensive mid winger and another striker, something different, like a Matt Godden or something. But I mean, it's difficult because in January, if they're going to be willing to spend, like you say about the takeover or the taker, because that's going to play into effect of, I know what they're going to spend. Do they like what we're spending? Da 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 da. But yeah, I think, like you said, this window is going to be huge for us. But not only in terms of people coming in, but people going out. If Konsa goes out, if you're sitting fourth, fifth, sixth in the league, why are you going to weaken your squad? You should never weaken your squad when you're sitting fourth in the league. Which I don't. If we sell Konsa and don't replace him, I think we're crazy. Yeah. Unless we get him a loan back, I think
if we sell Konsa, we've got to loan him back. That's got to be part of it. But are we? That's savvy to put that in the deal. I don't know.
Yeah. Freddie Saunders, evening chaps. He says, gutted we could not get all 3 points yesterday at Glanford Park. I think it was a big game as two promotion contenders were battling out, and I would have taken a point yesterday. Unfortunately, great saves from their keeper and two incredible goals from Josh Morris, who came on at half time, saw us lose the game when, from the sounds of things, we could have edged it. My main attitude to this is brush it off. Make clear to the team that we got outdone by some sublime technique from a very good player. It wasn't our day. We need to stay positive, stay upbeat, and push on. I think we are actually underdogs in some respects, not in history and stature, but because our squad is rather thin compared to many others around us, and as a result, only a good attitude and the incubation of positivity is going to see us over the line. We march on again to Tuesday against Peterborough. Coming your way, that's from Freddie, the local Palace fan. He put that himself in brackets, so I didn't have to call him. I would have called him that if he hadn't put it in brackets. But I mean, agree with Freddie, just brush it off, move on, be positive.
Yeah, absolutely. Go, like we said earlier, you know, Tuesday, big game. If we can win that, it takes us right back up there.
Alright, this one's from Bob Knight. It's the first of two, actually. I got one he sent during the week on Thursday, which I wanted to pick up as well. Bob Knight says, having watched the game yesterday, I can't agree that the first goal was a wonder strike. The way the wall was lined up, the striker could have gone around either side. What was Marshall doing? He hadn't joined the wall but left a gap to show the guy where to hit it. We were the better side for most of the game until we hit the final third. The crossing failed to clear the first defender, and while McGuinness works hard, he is not a finisher, as Northern Ireland know by playing him wide, and it has cost us a lot of potential points this season. We're crying out for a goal scorer, or we need to give Josh support by playing another centre forward nearer to him. I fear that come the new year, when we have a fire sale of our better players, we'll be set for another mediocre season. I mean, Cole's, I mean, you're talking about having another striker to push up a bit and play nearer to Josh McGuinness, but Carl's very rigid in his formation in terms of the 4-2-3-1. He likes to play with the way he does play, but at the same time, that does mean that those three attacking midfielders do get into the area, and we have seen that with the amount of goals we've seen from Reeves, you know, Marshall, Fosu, and Holmes so far this season. I mean, do you think that Cole would be tempted to try pushing someone else up alongside him?
I think if you're losing a game, you probably will, but I don't think you'd start with it, because I think the way we're set up at the moment is really good. I think the three behind, we're very fluid. I think what happens is when you have two people up top, you're easier to mark. You've got two centre halves and they'll just stick on the two. Whereas if you've got all the fluid players behind you, the defenders don't know whether they're coming or going. So I like that formation. So now I'd play the same one even if I was a manager myself.
I think we suit it.
4-4-2, it will work. I mean, in terms that you give your centre backs the centre back something to think about, but then you could get over flooded in the midfield. So it's all a big to me. It's a grey area. You've got pros and cons on both, but I can't see Robbo diverging from it unless we were chasing a game maybe and had to go proper direct and had to go long ball. You know, Leon Best and McGuinness up front. You wouldn't be happy with that if you were sending it off, would you?
Now, Bob Knight also emailed us on Thursday. We didn't really have time to get to emails on Thursday night's show because it was a busy one. But this was about the Konsa transfer. Myself and Mark, who was in on the Thursday, we're talking about Ezri Konsa, and there were some quotes that came out from the City Addicts meeting a couple of weeks ago where Carl had suggested that, you know, if he was Konsa, he might want to move on and go to a big club, and a 5 million price band was sort of mentioned and all this and that. So Bob Knight said, guys, I have to take issue with the Konsa transfer leak. Carl was quoted saying exactly the same, i.e. the 5 million transfer in January, about a month before meeting the meeting, and nobody questioned it then. It looked as Carl was trying to make sure he's got some money to spend. Now we're saying he hasn't spoken to Roland since pre-season, which he said the other day. And my feeling is there will be no new striker in January. So the squad, like Standard Liège, will be asset stripped before being sold. Sorry for all the doom and gloom. Now, I mean, Standard Liège did lose a lot of players before Roland sold him. sold them for, you know, a few years ago. And I mean, is that a worry that might happen to us if Roland is looking at selling? Do you worry that could happen, asset stripping?
Yeah, it could do. But then if he asset strips, it reduces the value of the company or the business. So I mean, if you agree a value of say 50 million. And part of those assets are those players, but then all of a sudden you sell all those assets, it's not going to be worth the same amount. So they're not going to come and say, yeah, we'll still pay 50 million even though you've got eight less players. It won't work like that.
Well, if you buy a house and it's full of furniture, yeah, and you agree to buy all the furniture and then they take the sofa away, you're fuming.
Exactly. Good analogy.
Yeah.
No more sofas. We've got enough sofas under the regime. No more.
Yeah,
that's where it came from. Yeah.
Sebo on the same thing says, Carl's already mentioned that he would be keen to get Esri back on loan if we saw. I mean, that is something we hear a lot from, not necessarily from managers and stuff, but I'm sure people have said that, oh, if we get rid of Lookman, let's try and get him back on loan, and it never happens. I mean, it never seems to happen for us. It has happened at clubs. I think you mentioned Dele Alli, and like I say, I mean, when Zaha was sold from Palace, I always remember that one because they got him back and that seemed like a cheating. Which I'm just accusing of a cheating. Right, we had another email from Peter Beerling. On Thursday, said, I've noticed on several Charlton social media sites recently contributors bemoaning a lack of bums on seats at recent home games. Now, of course, you know, I'll talk about the Rochdale game here on Tuesday night. It was 8,800 or something, which I was so shocked to see the crowd announced that low, because it's the lowest I can remember it being announced, and that is, we're almost exactly back to the crowd we were at 25 years ago when we first came back to the Valley. So we've almost gone backwards.
Full circle.
Yeah, in 25 years. That's a shame. It says, going to football is habit for me. This is Peter's email. The problem comes when you fall out of love with our club and the pain is too great for you and those with whom you are going to the matches with. You break the habit of going every game or every week, and very quickly you find other things to do which are less heartache than watching a poor team, and in many cases less expensive. People aren't going to drop everything just because the team is slightly less underfunded than Dross and the young kids we've had to put up with for years. They first need to be sure that the cause of their pain has been removed. So when those that are having second thoughts about the merits of our hapless senior management team, when a rumoured takeover is being mentioned, should remember not only has their lack of ambition continued to damage the team, but they've thrown away all that support that was built up over the years of hard work by the original and genuine target 10k following our return to the Valley, a crime that should and will never be forgiven. That's Peter Beerling from Emsworth Addicts. So, good point there by Peter. And you do feel in some cases the only way the crowds are going to come back is if there's a takeover. And I think that will renew some of the vigour amongst the fan base. Right, just before the show started, about an hour before the show started, Paul Breen is an author and a Charlton fan. He came into the studio to have a chat with me. I'll explain this all pretty much in the intro to the interview as well, but it's to discuss about ideas for Xmas presents, Christmas presents for Charlton fans. Obviously, Christmas is coming up. Right, so obviously Christmas is around the corner, and here joining us now in the Charlton Live studio with some advice on perhaps some potential Christmas gifts for Charlton fans, some potential books, is an author and Charlton fan, Paul Breen. Good evening, Paul. How are you doing?
Yeah, Louis, yeah, everything's great. Yeah. Just back from Ireland, and unfortunately I missed yesterday's game, but judging by the result, maybe I didn't miss too much, but looking forward to the Portsmouth game in a week's time.
Yeah, excellent. The anniversary game, of course, coming up. Now, as people may well have just noticed, there, you are Irish yourself, and it's quite an interesting story as to how you actually became a Charlton fan, because you only moved to, only sort of started coming over to England in 2006.
Yeah, I came to work in the University of Greenwich in 2006, and then I came back the next summer for a more permanent job, and then I moved to Charlton. And like many people from Ireland, I supported Liverpool at that time, actually. But you know,
you've seen the light since then.
Yeah. Once I moved here, I sort of then thought, well, it's a bit weird following a team, you know, a couple of hundred miles away when there's one down at the bottom of the road from where I live. So I started going to Charlton games, and then I often thought of myself actually as the jinx, because I started following the club just as the slide kind of began from the Premiership years right down to that bad season in League One when I think we finished 13th or 14th. But
testament to yourself then that you've managed to stick with Charlton despite the fact that you've only really known disappointment, I guess.
Yeah, well, up until the 2011-12 season, I think that was the case. But no, I think right from the start I just got this feeling that it was very much a family club and a community club, and started to make friends, and you know, got used to going to the games and loved the atmosphere. And you know, winning's not everything, so it's nice when you do win, but I just really got into the atmosphere and the whole ritual of going to the match. And
I think winning's not everything is a slogan us Charlton fans like to live by, of course. Now, and also you said, you're telling me just off air that you met your wife through a Charlton connection as well.
Yeah, I mean, she worked for the University of Greenwich. Well, she still works for the University of Greenwich. And I met her up at Sparrows Lane in the Avery Hill campus. And that was a couple of years after I moved to Charlton. One of the unfortunate things, actually, about 6 months into the relationship, I discovered that she had a terrible family secret. Her brother and her father were sort of soft Millwall fans, but they also go and watch Charlton, so, you know, yeah. Fathers from a different generation. I think there's a lot of older fans like this, where they just went to see football week about at Charlton and Millwall. So, yeah.
Well, I think if we're talking family secrets, I mean, everyone calls me a Palace fan wrongly, but I've got family who support Millwall, family who support Palace, so it's just something you get used to in South London. Now, the reason you are here is, of course, like we said at the start, Christmas is coming up, and you wanted to sort of make some suggestions for books that Charlton fans could receive as gift, or perhaps give as gifts to other supporters. Now, of course, we could start with your own. You've got two books that are related to Charlton, of course, the Charlton Men and the Bones of a Season. Why don't you tell us a little bit about those two books first?
Yeah, the Charlton Men. It actually started out just as a bit of hobby writing in the beginning, and it was biographical at that stage, you know, the story of being a Charlton fan and coming over from Ireland and then getting so attached to the club, I'd say almost getting addicted to the club. But then I sent that idea off to the publisher, and the publisher reckoned I should turn it into a work of fiction, so that's kind of how it evolved and developed. So it's actually the story of two guys who are settling down in London around the start of the 2011-12 season. One of them, though, as I said, it's not biographical, but one of them is Irish like me. He's actually coming back to, or he has moved over to London after a spell in prison because of a joyriding incident when he was young. So,
yeah.
And he's trying to make a fresh start. And at that stage, you know, he's not a Charlton fan. And the other guy, or the other main character in the story, is called Lance, and he's returning from serving in Afghanistan, where he got injured. Mm. And the thing that sustained him through all of his experiences was actually being a Charlton fan. And, you know, he's got a Charlton tattoo. He's been a lifelong supporter. So he manages to convert Fergus the Irishman to becoming a Charlton fan as well. So basically the book follows the story of their friendship as it develops, and that happens to be the same season when Chris Powell builds the new team, and, you know, the promotion bid is in there as well. But it's a combination of football and various events in these two guys' lives. And there's also a thriller element in there and a romantic element in as well, because a woman comes along and comes between them, and so it's quite a fast-paced story. And then, you know,
I guess in a way, for you're saying there, it's about football and what happens in their lives. But for a lot of supporters, anyway, football is such an intricate part of their lives that they do experience, you know, the rest of their lives almost through football. Like, so they'll move events around so they can go to games. They'll meet people who they end up having relationships with or becoming best friends with through games as well. So I guess it's very much, it could be something that a lot of fans will see in themselves when they read that book.
Yeah, I would hope so. And you know, I have got very good feedback from supporters, you know, because it is very much about how, in the case of the Irish supporter, for example, a bit like my own experience, he comes over here. You know, he's not a fan of Charlton before. He begins to get attracted to this whole idea of going to games, and then he loves the experience and so on. So, you know, I find myself now, I mean, my year is basically built around the fixture list. When the fixtures are released in June, that's how I plan the various events, what I'm going to do for my birthday, what I'm going to do for my wedding anniversary, various things. Of course, when I say what I'm going to do for my wedding anniversary, that means I build a weekend break or something, you know, around the game, and let the wife go shopping. And, you know, but football, it really is such a crucial part of people's lives, and, you know, not just in the sense of going to the games. I think it is the whole atmosphere of friendship and relationships that you build up around that, and just getting to know people, not just from Charlton and from London, but I've met lots of people from different parts of the country, and then as well, it gives you an opportunity when I go to away games, I can meet up with old friends or people that are living in certain places as well.
Excellent. Now, your second book, The Bones of a Season as well, do you want to tell us about that one?
Yeah, that was a sequel, and actually one of the main, originally the idea was to write a trilogy of books, and you know, now I have written two, but The Charlton Men was released in 2014 and then The Bones of a Season was released in October 2016, and one of the main motivational factors, I think, in releasing that was the amount of people who said, well, you know, you promised us a trilogy, you've got to give us a second book. But I still get people who tell me that they're waiting until the whole trilogy is written until they buy them all as a collection. But at this stage, I think I'm not planning right now on writing the third book in as fast a turnaround as the first two. The Bones of a Season is set in the year after the promotion from League One under Chris Powell, and it's much more of a crime novel. It's very different. I think people have said that it's quite a different style because the first one is maybe a bit more literary, but the second one is actually very much, you know, an old-fashioned tale of, I don't want to give too much of the plot away, but basically it looks into Lance's family background, which does involve a bit of gangsterism and lots of things that I found out from doing research with, you know, actual, maybe I shouldn't say this on the radio, but people who know things about how the gangster era was played out in London. So it's a very different book, and people who have read it said that, you know, they've enjoyed it a lot. And I mean, both books are the kind of works that, you know, anyone can read. It's not just, they're not just books for people who like football, because non-fans have read them as well and been very pleasantly surprised. And I think the second one in particular, The Bones of a Season, is one that you can read it in isolation, and I think you can really enjoy that, because I'm quite surprised. I thought the football description in the first one was very good, but the second one has got even more positive feedback about the description of the games. And actually what that does as well is it looks back over significant events in Charlton's history, and the character Lance, because In the first book, it was very much focused on, you know, a couple of seminal events, like going back to the Valley, and then you know, his experiences of following Charlton in Afghanistan, and how, you know, that love of the club got him through the problems that he faced. But in the second one, I go back and look at a whole range of things, and especially the playoff game against Sunderland.
Yeah.
And I actually sent a copy off to Sasa Ilić.
Oh, right.
Because
okay.
the game is described in great detail.
Yeah.
And Sasa, he never got back to me, though. He suggested that I should write his biography. Slightly different style of writing, I think, yeah. Writing someone's biography and writing fiction.
That'd be an interesting task to take on, though, I'm sure. Now, where can Charlton fans get their hands on your two books?
They can get them from Amazon, or they can get them from the publishers. I would say Amazon is probably the easiest way of getting the books. They can also contact me either on Twitter. I'm on Twitter at the very simple ID at Charlton Men, or if anyone comes to the Supporters Trust stall in the period up to Christmas, I should have a few books there as well. But I think Amazon, or contact me directly on Twitter, is probably the easiest way to get the books.
Excellent. Now, you were going to give me a list as well of other books that the Charlton fans may enjoy as Christmas presents. Have you got that to hand?
Yeah, and I'm only going to talk about books that have a solid Charlton connection, and not books by authors who happen to be Charlton supporters.
Yeah.
Because if I started to talk about those books, you know, we could actually be here until after Christmas. Because I know there are a lot of Charlton fans who have written books in different genres and so on. But really, for the purposes of this interview, I'm just going to look at, you know, some of the main books that might make good Christmas gifts for Charlton fans. I think the one that I'm going to start with is obviously Rick Everett's Battle for the Valley, which is very appropriate at this time.
The 25th anniversary coming up.
Yeah. And you know, this first appeared back in the 1990s and then was updated in 2014, and I didn't actually read this book until after I had written The Charlton Men, and I'm kind of glad that I didn't, because then I might have found myself feeling that you know, I was trying to compete against the excellent job that Rick does in describing that whole battle to get back to the Valley, because in my book I only cover it over a few pages. Yeah. But I mean, Rick actually does this in, you know, 320 pages, I think, and you know, it's a great account of the history of that time period. And again, it is more than just a story about coming back to the Valley, because it also goes into the history of Charlton Athletic, so it's not confined to one period.
And even it's a bit of an education for fans of perhaps my age and a bit younger, who obviously weren't around at that time as well, and perhaps didn't realise the fight that the fans had to go through at that time.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think that, you know, out of all the factual books that have been written about Charlton, I think this is one that people will be reading, you know, decades from now, because it does capture what I think for everyone was, you know, the most important moment in the recent history of the club. And even, you know, I did a recent article for Voice of the Valley where I interviewed some young fans about the significance of that, and even people who weren't born in 1992 still have that sense of how important it was. So yeah. I would definitely recommend this, and maybe even especially for those younger fans that weren't around at the time, or people like me who weren't here at the time, as I was in Ireland.
Excellent. What's up next?
Then we have a couple of books by David Ramsden. One of those is Charlton Athletic, A Pictorial History. And then there is Charlton Athletic, A History. Now, David kind of combines art and text, because he by his own admission, I think he sees himself maybe as more of an artist than what we would see as a conventional author.
Mm.
So his work is very visual. And, you know, I bought the Pictorial History for my father-in-law a couple of years ago. It was published in 2013, and I got him that for Christmas, and, you know, he was very impressed with it. And again, there's a lot of images and you know, memorabilia that David has put in there that makes it a book that's very much suitable for people, I think, who are interested in looking up history and, you know, seeing actual pictures of events from the history of the club. Though again, his other book, Charlton Athletic, A History, I think that's about 200 pages or so, and that tells the story of the club from when it was formed up from 1905 onwards. So yeah, I mean, there's a lot of books about the history of Charlton Athletic. One that I think maybe I either bought this myself or somebody got it for me as a gift was the Essential History of Charlton Athletic by Paul Clayton.
Yep.
And again, that's a hardcover book that was published in 2001. And that includes a foreword by Derek Hales. And that's actually talking about Charlton biographies or autobiographies. I mean, that would be an interesting one, I think, if it was ever written.
I can imagine.
Yeah,
because we've heard stories about Killer Hales.
Yeah, because actually in another interview, I'm not sure who it was with, I actually said that one of the first Charlton books that I had read was Derek Hales' autobiography. But of course, it was actually talking about Keith Peacock's book, No Substitute. And again, I think that's another one that, you know, would be of interest to anyone who's interested in the history of the club. And that was published in 2004 by the club, and it's the story of Keith, who I think, as older fans will know, was the league's first ever substitute in the 1960s. So again, I would recommend at least one of those books, I think, for anyone who's interested in history.
Excellent. Well, Paul, brilliant. Thank you for coming in and giving us some ideas. Charlton fans who are stumped, perhaps, what to give out as gifts this Christmas. There's a few books that you could give to fellow Charlton fans, which I'm sure they enjoy. Paul, thanks for joining us this evening.
Little chip ball looking for Lorana Fosu, who's onside. Fosu, edge of the penalty area, can he get a shot away? He can, and it's the opening goal. Tariq Fosu sprung the offside trap, gets his second goal of the season, and Charlton's first of the evening, and they're 1-0 up here at the Banksy Stadium.
fat enough or believes I'm stupid enough to take it. That's my wife's words, that, by the way.
So welcome back to Cheltenham Live here on Maritime Radio. Thanks very much to author and Cheltenham fan Paul Breen. There, he's given us some ideas for books that Addicts fans could buy for fellow Addicts fans for Christmas, including his own two, of course, the Cheltenham Men and the Bones of a Season. So thanks very much, like I say, to Paul for that interview. Just a couple of bits that have come in while we're listening to that. Red Chaser said Cons are going in January would be a big blow, but a centre back, we should have Pearson Lennon available again, albeit not as cultured. The money from Cons could be crucial in any other incomings, loan or otherwise. But I mean, you know, we've seen when Lookman went last year, I mean, how much of that money did we get immediately to spend on players? And you know, that's a big question, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. So, I don't think we're guaranteed any money if we do sell Konsa. But unless Robbo's been told by the board that if we do sell Konsa, then he'll get some of it, or we don't know. But yeah, even though we are blessed in centre back at the moment, I still think we weaken our squad. Which I don't think we should do if we're definitely in the top six.
Right. Yesterday was the 250th appearance for the club by one Chris Solly. Signed, he joined the club when he was 11 years old, Chris Solly. That was 15 years ago now. Incredible to think, really. Made 250 appearances in that time. He's done everything here, from ball boy up to club captain now, of course. You're gonna hear from him in the South London Press tomorrow. We did an interview with him after the game yesterday, so if you look out for that on the South London Press website, you can hear what Chris Olley's thoughts on his time at the club thus far. But as fans, when a player like Chris Solly reaches such a landmark as 250 appearances, it's something you want to celebrate. And you look back at his career. Now, I was looking back to his debut. This shows you how long he's been here. His debut was made on the 3rd of May 2009, our last game of the season. We got relegated from the Championship when we beat Norwich by 4-2 and dragged them down with us. He came on as a 14th-minute substitute for a D Ward. I don't know who that is.
Darren Ward.
I can't remember him at all.
The blonde geezer.
Yeah,
he was a centre-back primarily, wasn't he?
Yeah, I remember him.
I mean,
Millwall.
Clearly a fellow Charlton legend, because I literally can't remember who he is and he played in our relegation season. But that was Chris Solly's debut. What a player he's grown to be. Mr. Dependable in that right-back slot, isn't it? I mean, you're surprised. I mean, it's a surprise that he's still here in some cases. If you think where he was four or five years ago, we would certainly be snapped up by, you know, a club in the league above at the very minimum, you know, a Premier League club. But he never did. But I mean, what a stalwart he's been, and you never get anything less than 100% effort from him. And like I say, he's really reliable as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I always look back to when we had that promotion campaign, and we were looking across the squad and thinking, right, we've got all these new people in. Well, who have we got a right back? Chris Solly. And I remember people being a bit sort of worried about that and thinking, oh, is he going to be good enough? And that season, he really came to life. I think did he win Player of the Year that year? I can't remember.
Yeah, I think he did. He won it twice in a row, didn't he?
Yeah, he did, yeah. And he's just, ever since that season, he's been Mr. Consistent and Mr. Dependable. I know he's had some injury issues, and maybe we've had to sort of look after him a little bit with his knee and everything like that, but like you say, and a complete stalwart, and he's been brilliant, and now he's the captain. It does, like you say, it makes you realise how long he really has been here, because I remember him being that vulnerable youngster right back that we weren't too sure about, and now you look at him and he's probably the first name on the team.
And if you think of the season he came of age, like you say, was that season that we got promoted with 101 points from League One, because before they displayed a handful of games in the couple of seasons after he made his debut. And to make your name in a team where, you know, you get 101 points, you score a lot of goals, there's a lot of big name players in there, to win Player of the Season that year just shows how impressive he was in that position. And it's not in a fashionable position as well, a fullback, who cares? But he's made it his own, and he puts in performances week in, week out.
Yeah, but I don't think I've ever seen a game where he's got under a 7 or an 8. I know it's that he probably rose tinted glass as well, but I can't remember. There have probably been a couple of games where he's done, you know, a few misplaced passes, but I've never seen him have a horrendous game, and he's been skinned left, right and centre. I remember Powley come out after his 100th appearance, I think it was against Brighton, and Powley said that he was a Premier League defender, and Powley used to think he was good at 1v1s, but he said that Chris Solly is so much better than him on a 1v1. And to add that, you know, you must be pretty decent. But I think he's, like Lou said, he's consistent every week, and
he is probably one of the first, because you could just depend on him. It's just steady Eddie. Not like Eddie Howes, but you know.
scored twice for Charlton. His first one came in a 3-1 away win on a Friday night at Leighton Orient, which I remember. I was on holiday, but the game was on Sky, and I was watching it in a bar in Ayia Napa. I was the only one watching the game, and I also remember spraying cocktail out my mouth when he scored his goal, because I didn't. Waggy had the ball in the corner. I thought he was just going to hold it in the corner, so I took a big swig of whatever drink I was drinking, and then he cut inside, laid it off to Solly, touched home to relieve because we were down to 10 men and hanging on, and I had a mouthful of cocktail, and instead of swallowing and celebrating, I just decided to just spray it everywhere, all over the revelers. And of course, his other goal was that superb strike away at Blackpool, a 2-0 win. And I mean, anyone who's seen that goal won't forget it. It was an unbelievable goal. He played at left back for quite a stint actually in that season. And that was the reason why he was over on that left hand side, but hit the ball with the outside of his right boot and arrowed into the top corner. Now, I did ask for you guys to let me know your favourite memories of Chris Solly's career, and Tony Brown said that goal in particular, scoring away at Blackpool, and then the celebration that followed when he went off running pretty much down the prom, ended up in Fleetwood after his celebration. And then Reese said he's always been solid over the years, no real standout moments being a right back that I can remember, but he's always put in a shift, given 100% and can't ask for more. We haven't had to worry about the right back position for years, which is very nice, and that's a very good point. I mean, Chris Solly is one of the Mr. Charlton, especially one of the players that we needed, I think, as a link between the fans and the players. Pretty much the only one we had, one of the only ones we had left last season, you think of like him and Jacko, when we were getting relegated from the Championship. We needed characters like that, and that's why it's so important. Right, we have actually run out of time here on Charlton Live, so we haven't got time to preview Tuesday evening's game against Peterborough. It's a huge one, so if you can get down to the Valley, make sure you come and join all of us down here at the Valley as we face the posh. But Lewis Catt, thank you for joining me this evening.
No worries, Louis, thank you.
Nathan Muller, thanks.
Cheers,
for coming
mate.
In
see you Tuesday.
I've been Louis Mendes. This has been Charlton Live. Thanks for all your tweets and your emails. Thanks to Simon Webster and Paul Breen, who've been on the show this evening, Carl Robinson for interviewing me. We hope you've enjoyed it. Let's hope the Addicts can get back on track with 3 points here at the Valley on Tuesday against Peterborough. We'll see you later. Charlton Live.